Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, May 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Time once again to talk car maintenance and repair, or truck maintenance and repair if you prefer. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. You got a question for Gordon Fricke? This is the time. Get in line. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question for the great Gordon Fricke, you can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, your car calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. On the show today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is none other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the auto repair and service industry for many years. He is a great guest. Don't smirk. He is a great guest on this program, and we're always happy to have him here. 800-348-2551 if you have a car question. Now, my screen is not working, but I see some calls on the line, but there are a few open lines. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, how are you?
Great, great. Thanks, Ray. How are you?
So you took the beautiful ride to Albany from Hoosick Falls on the bike today.
Yeah, I decided one of these, I always said one of these times I'm going to ride down on a motorcycle on a beautiful, perfect day.
Yeah.
Weather-wise, and this is it.
Nice and cool.
Oh, it's beautiful.
But then you got to drive on 787, which stinks.
I think I'm going to sneak over to Route 4 and go the back way around Hudson Valley and go on some secondary roads.
That's nice.
Now, I don't like the interstate.
Maybe some of the other bikers who are listening now will race you now that they know which way you're going.
Right.
Right after the show. Gordon Fricke, there are several emails already here on the phone lines. Now I can see my screen, and it's loading up. Anything you want to touch upon before we get to the emails?
Well, you know, the seasons abruptly change nowadays, it seems like, right?
Yeah.
Winter kind of drags and the spring is nasty, cold and rainy, and then bang, it's 80 degrees. So
yeah.
We're still changing over some snow tires, but now I'm getting calls for summer things, traveling, batteries in lawn and garden.
Yeah.
You know, we sell other batteries. Motorcycle activity is ramping up. So, you know, the season change is going to happen fast, and now it's going to be travel time.
Speaking of ramping up, you've been riding a motorcycle for years. Did you ever get the urge to do the full Evel Knievel?
You mean
go up the ramp and go flying over the,
Mack
trucks?
When we were teenagers, we set up little ramps and did a little bit of jumping on mini bikes and small motorcycles and I have landed on the ground before.
Yeah.
And I'm no kid anymore, so I don't like that feeling.
You know, when I was a kid, you know, Evel was, 73, 74, something like that. All the kids in the neighborhood, we had our bikes and we built ramps and they were dangerous as all get out. And our parents looked out the windows. The kids will be fine.
Yeah, it's just
how times have changed.
They're just playing Evel Knievel.
Yeah, now, you know, helicopter parents now, you'll be lucky to get on a bike.
Exactly.
Gordon Fricke's our guest. We digress, of course, because that's what we do. This email from Tig in Chesterfield, Massachusetts. I have a 2012 Nissan Versa. It has a manual transmission, but no tachometer. When I was taught to drive, I was told to downshift below 2,000 RPM and upshift above 3,000 RPM. With no tach, I drive by sound and feel. Is it bad for the car to operate outside that RPM window? Also, could a tachometer be installed if I wanted one?
Interesting question, because you don't really need a tachometer for normal driving. If you're racing or if you have an over-the-road truck and you're concerned about where your RPM limit is, that's great, but you know, in the early days, no vehicle had a tachometer to watch your RPM. And the early Volkswagens had interesting things on their speedometer. They had a series of dots. So at, let's say, I don't even know what the speeds were, but let's say at 20 miles an hour, you had a dot meaning get out of first gear and go into second. And then at a next speed interval, it had two dots, get out of second, go into third. And then you had three dots, get out of third, go into fourth. And that matched the RPM of the engine. And most people just learn how to do it by hear, by feel and by sound. So the emailer is perfectly fine doing exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
And the answer is yes, you can put a tachometer in any car. They're great. So many cars have them today. How many people do you think even look at them or know what they're telling you?
I mean, this is the irony. Now, this guy's got a manual transmission with no tach. I have a Nissan from a year before that. That's automatic. It has a tachometer.
Right, right. And what do you do with that tachometer?
I like to see it rev.
Yeah, nothing, right? Just watch the needle move around.
See how loud I get when I hit 5,000 RPMs. All right, let's see. This is from Robert. Oh, no, it's Roger. Excuse me. Roger in Poughkeepsie. I own a 2004 Nissan Pathfinder. When I load even light items in the back, the rear of the vehicle drops down more than it should. I suspect it may be the rear shocks. I'm capable of repairs on the vehicle, oil changes, brakes, etc. Is this a job I can do myself, or should I leave it to the professionals?
Yeah, good question. Contrary to popular belief, the shock absorbers do not suspend the vehicle. They don't hold up any of the load. They just dampen the jarring of the suspension going through bumps. So they're shock absorbers.
Right.
So loading the vehicle, the shocks aren't going to help anything unless you buy load leveler shocks, which is a really ancient thing. You know, I don't even know if you can get them anymore. But he may have some broken springs back there that he doesn't know about.
So, I think that on one of my many, many vehicles over the years, it was every time you hit a bump, it would bounce. Maybe it was the old Blazer. I don't know. Didn't you put new coils or
that
new springs
was,
in
that? That was probably a shock absorber issue where they keep bouncing and bouncing and bouncing like those old Midas commercials.
Yes.
But the load carrying capability are the springs.
God, I've had so many lousy cars, I can't even keep track. This one is from Ben. I drive a 2014 Subaru Legacy, and I have an iPhone. Used to be that my iPhone would automatically link to my car's Bluetooth when I turned on the car, but ever since I got a new iPhone and successfully paired it, I have to manually link the phone to the Bluetooth each and every time I drive. Any idea why?
Not specifically on that car, but I have a feeling it has to do with the setup of the vehicle.
Yeah.
Because I have different cars that I drive, and if I get a used car that I really love and I drive it for a while and I pair my phone to it, it instantly picks it up because you're in there and the two devices do the handshake and you're good.
Yeah.
I have a feeling he's just got to go into his settings.
Okay, fair enough. Let's grab one, maybe two calls before the first break. Gordon Fricke, our guest today. It's Cars at Trucks, and Dave is in Ulster. Dave, you're on.
Hi, Ray and Gordon. Thanks for taking my call.
Hello. Sure.
I've got a 2010 Civic. I also have a motorcycle. I might get into my head gasket question at the end. But my 2010 Civic seems to jitter transmission problem up a slight hill almost always. If I take it out of D and put it into D3, it immediately stops. I don't think it's the coil packs or the spark plugs. It doesn't have a check engine light. But I've been told that I should maybe change transmission fluid. How do you feel? And if so, magnetic drain plug, can I get the filings analyzed?
Yeah, so good question, because automatic transmission shutter is a fairly common occurrence nowadays, more so than ever, because of all of the lockup converters and emissions and fuel consumption aids to get that transmission shifted up and locked up as soon as possible. So to answer your question, yes, fluid maintenance is critical. And a drain and refill is basically what happens most of the time now. There are some very good additives that can be put in with the fluid, and it's called something very clever. I think it's called stop shutter or shutter stop or something like that.
Yeah.
And it really does work. Ford had and has a product, and they called it a friction modifier because the engineers had to name it. But yes, that shutter is common. So, drain and refill. And if you do put the shutter stop in there, just use a good quality brand, something well known. So it's not, you know, something that Joe mixed up in the backyard and, you know, and put a label on the jug.
No
offense to anybody named Joe out there.
No, absolutely not. All right, we got a minute here.
No need to analyze the filings on the drain plug?
You know, I don't know if you can send that out for analysis or not, but just your drain plug may not even have a magnet on it. But if it does, just note what's on there or maybe save it. But there isn't a lot you can do about it. You know, okay. Just service it. Okay. And I think your shutter's going to stop. I can almost bet it will.
Dave, we have about 1 minute if you want to throw that motorcycle question in, and then we got to take a break.
What did you write in on? I have a head gasket on my GS11 or E problem, four valve.
Yeah, well, so this is a R1200RT. R1200RT BMW.
BMW?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Boxer, yeah.
Yep, big fat boxer twin.
Yeah. I got a little drip on that, my head gasket, my 1100. And
a little drip.
You know, it's been in storage for 10 years because of that head gasket. I have all the manuals and the head gasket. I retorque the heads and the head, and yeah, it still drips.
Still does it. Yeah.
Kind of want to get around it by using epoxy or something on the fin, but I don't think I'm going to do that.
Nah, you'll never seal it up from the outside. But if you're going to ride the bike this year, just clean it well and just see how quickly it gets wet again. It may be very, very super slow. You may be able to live with it.
All right, Dave, we got to take a break. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Automotive Maintenance and Repair today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, it's cars and trucks and fixing and keeping them nice with Gordon Fricke. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Gordon Fricke, let's go to Salt Point. Ed, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2010 Ranger, which, you know, I love. It's been performance-wise brilliant. But I'd like to now extend its life, and it has superficial rust in various places, you know, around the bottoms of the doors and that sort of thing. Is there anything that is a killer rust treatment that I can do it yourself, you know, and grind it off and put some sort of retardant on there? Or once rusted, you know, it's got cancer and it's never going to be cured.
Yeah, so there are products that you can do yourself, as long as you don't have holes. If this is just surface rust, or, you know, it hasn't gone through, there's a bunch of products out there that will really convert it or lock it in. And if you just go online and search, there's some rust converters that you clean and prep the surface and brush this stuff on, and it turns black, and it creates a barrier, and you're trying to keep the oxygen out. So that's the key. There are also products that you can physically brush on existing rust, which would be more suitable for your frame and underbody panels that aren't really painted, differentials, housings, covers, stuff like that. And that is, it's like just a paint product. Mm. And you brush it or roll it, and it also changes, it bites into the existing surface, and then it locks out the oxygen, and the stuff really, really works. So, yes, there are products out there that you can use.
Ed, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, and I'm not going to say a brand name here, just in case your answer is negative, but there are those entities that will, you know, and they're big names, and you go and they do the undercoating of your car, and allegedly everything is safe and the rust free forever. Any good? I mean, I was literally having this conversation with Jim Lavoulis today.
Yeah. So, you know, when you buy a new car and you get sent in to the F&I guy,
yeah,
or gal,
mm-hmm,
and that's when you really get some serious pressure for running boards, lights, undercoating, floor mats, mud flaps, blah, 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 right? So the undercoating is our subject, and if applied, it is definitely beneficial. If applied properly, I should finish that sentence. And it all has to do with the skill and ability and desire of the technician applying the stuff.
Mm.
And if they get it in all the right areas and spray it inside the cavities of the doors and the rocker panels definitely is a benefit to the vehicle.
Yeah.
There's a lot of products now that can go on existing rust on an older car, and they are lanolin-based.
Yes.
Sheep's wool, lanolin. Yes.
Mm.
And they stay greasy and shiny, and they don't harden, and they're a bit of a mess, but they're more suitable for an older car.
Hmm.
So depending on the age of your car and if it's already starting to rust, that will help you decide what product to use.
I have one that I'm considering, maybe going to one of these places and having it done. I heard some good things.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Gordon Fricke is our guest, 800-348-2551. Jim and Hadley. Jim, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. I guess I'm going to pull off. My question is timing belt maintenance. On the recommended cycle, should you not really adhere to that? Potential damage on a particular car over another. I've lost snap two on Toyotas and, well, just put you out of service. But what's your take on the Hyundai, a 2-liter? It's a 2012 Hyundai Elantra series, the 2-liter motor.
Yeah.
Is it just a shutdown if the belt snaps, or is there damage?
Most of your engines today are considered interference, and that means that the piston to valve timing is critical. And if that chain or belt were to break, the pistons would hit any of the open valves. And that data is easily found. You can look that up very quickly to determine if yours is in an interference engine. Probably is. Just about everything is now, because the tolerances got so tight due to combustion chamber improvements and fuel efficiency and more valves per cylinder. And they generally will do some serious damage when the belt breaks, because you're usually, you know, above idle when that happens.
Jim.
Sure, sure. Highway speed. You know, it's variable. You know, the dealer or repair guy said, no, you got to do it at 60, yet the manual says 90. And how far stretching beyond that manual recommendation are you? I mean,
yeah. It what you need to do is
it's a relative. It's a relative's car. Let's put it this way, right. Not mine.
Do you like the relative, Jim?
Yes, I do. I'm going to have to be cleaning up after it if it.
Then let's do it at 60. No, I'm just if you go in the manual, the not the dealer subscribed maintenance that they, you know, cook up themselves, but the actual owner's manual maintenance schedule. If it says 90,000 miles, they're going to be probably basing that on time and mileage. So if this car is, you know, 20 years old and only has 60,000 miles on it, you got to do the belt because the belt is too old. But if the car has normal mileage for its age, I would stick to what the manufacturer recommends the interval at.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Without taxing my feeble brain, could you explain what an interference engine is?
Yes. So basically you have the valves in the cylinder head that open and shut.
Yep.
And when they're open, they protrude into the combustion chamber.
That's the interference?
Well, no, that's where the piston lives. So the piston is going up and down, reciprocating, and the valves are opening and shutting at the right time. If your timing belt breaks or skips a whole bunch of teeth, that relationship between the cam and the crank goes out of whack, and the pistons will smash into any of the open valves. And that's a big hit. So it usually does such damage that the head's ruined or the whole engine's trashed.
But why do they call it an interference engine?
Because if they go out of time, the pistons interfere with the valves.
So they name the type of engine based on something that can go wrong.
Yes.
That is really, really, really pessimistic. All right, let's go to Andrea and Lee. Andrea, you're on.
Hi, yes. I was calling about, I have a Honda Ridgeline 2010, and all the lights on the dashboard have gone out. There's no park, reverse, or the odometer. You can't see that. We took it to our mechanic, and he thought it was a fuse, but after looking it over, he said he doesn't think it is.
Mm.
And he thought maybe we should take it to the dealer.
So it's illumination?
Nothing.
So it's the illumination of your gauges and your park neutral drive positions? Is everything out or just like half of it?
My blinkers, when I put the blinker on, I can see the blinkers.
Yep.
The radio has a light on it. Has a, you know, the clock has a light on it, but just the park and the drive and the reverse and the odometer don't show.
Okay. So it's entirely possible that is within the instrument cluster, which is kind of no man's land, but there are companies that repair those now if they're repairable. And basically what has to happen is the cluster gets removed from the vehicle. It gets sent to one of these electronic shops that does automotive instruments. They fix it, send it back, you reinstall it, and you're all good. And it works. I've sent a lot of stuff out over the years. But you have
to...
Go ahead, Andrea.
Do you think a 2010, is it worth it to do that with the truck?
I would talk to your normal repair shop and ask that question and then get an estimate of what it would take to R&R the instrument cluster and then have them contact a repair facility, repair shop that does those, and they'll give a quote.
Okay.
And then you'll decide if it's worth it.
Well, thanks, Andrea. We appreciate the call. Now, inside the instrument cluster, Gordon, you've presumably opened one up in the past, right?
Used to be able to do stuff to them, fix them, you know, replace individual light bulbs or change a gauge, but they're pretty tightly sealed now.
But if it's everything, it has to be at that initial point, like a brainstem going in, or it's got to be the power to it, right?
Well, it's the circuitry inside that usually goes bad, the branches. You know,
are they chips now, or are they?
Yeah, it's full. There's a bunch of chips in those and circuitry, printed circuits carrying those signals all over the place inside the instrument cluster.
Gordon Fricke is our guest today. It's automotive maintenance and repair. We'll hit the email bag at the next break, but let's go back to the phones right now, and we go to lovely Palatine Bridge. Alan, you're on.
Hi, Jim. How are you today? Hey, I got a question on a 1968 Camaro, 4-speed, 350. I've got a leak on the rear main seal, and I've been using some of the oil that's got a little bit of synthetic in it, and I was wondering, switching to 2050 will probably help, but do you know of any additives that actually help seal that rear main seal?
Yeah, there are some additives out there. You know, do you think maybe it's the original rear main seal in this car?
No.
Okay.
But I think it might have been replaced as much as like 15 years ago.
Yeah. So there are some quality suppliers that make oil additives to help soften and reduce or slow down or stop seal leakage. Go to an auto parts store or search online. And just pick a name brand, a big company that sells other products that offers these sealants. You know, they sell stop leaks and oil. And it's not going to harm the engine if you use it, you know, as prescribed. You don't want to dump 10 cans in it. But definitely worth a try. Did you say you're running synthetic oil in that car?
A mix of there's motor oils out there with the zinc additive in it that also have a blend of mineral and also a little synthetic.
Yeah.
And I'm finding it actually leaked a little bit more when I use that.
Yes,
so,
that's what
I'm just going back to like a regular 2050.
Yes, that was what I was going to allude to.
Too thin?
Well, thin, yes, and also the zinc properties that he spoke about is critical in that flat, in that tappet type engine. So, yes, obviously it's a summer car. So I have some big old V8s myself, and I use 2050, and I use a high zinc additive oil, and some of them call it racing oil. Doesn't mean you're going to take it down the track, but it's formulated for these older flat tappet engines with zinc. And it's not a synthetic oil, so it will tend to leak less. So definitely use that.
Thank you. Really made my day. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. Now, are you Jim or am I Jim?
I don't know.
All right. We'll find out. Maybe we'll mention our names more often. Ray Graff here, joined today by Gordon Fricke, and we take your calls on cars and trucks and repair and maintenance and whatnot. Well, let's go to Chris in Housatonic. Chris.
Yeah, Gordon, I got a question for you. I was looking at the new Jeeps, you know, the newer Jeeps that are coming out. Is that a good car to get?
Yeah, I mean, the Jeep line has been an excellent line of vehicles, very popular. We don't see massive problems with them. They're good vehicles.
Well, yeah.
I recognize your voice. Do you have a Grand Cherokee?
Yes, I do, Gordon.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got good experience with that Grand Cherokee. So no reason why not to stick with that with that brand.
You know it
if,
well.
If you're happy with that product.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a car or truck question for us today, email is voxpop@wamc.org, and we will get to that shortly. But let's go to Robert in Clifton Park. Robert.
Yes, Robert speaking. I'll be right back.
Huh?
How you doing?
Good. Oh, welcome.
I'm just doing an order, but I got to talk to you guys. Yeah, how's it going?
Good. I mean, if you want to go on the other side of the break and do your order, and we'll come back to you.
No. I want to get this out of the way.
My engineer is shaking his head. All right, go ahead, Robert.
Is it a food order?
No, it's a delivery order for Tractor Supply.
All right, go ahead. You're on.
So yeah, my car. I have an issue with. It's a 2014 Toyota Corolla. Like base model, but after all these years, like even a fuse doesn't help. But I don't have any power coming out of my USB or my cigarette lighter thing.
Yep.
So
that's a common one because those outlets tend to get a lot of use, and sometimes they get extra things plugged in together. You know, those branch things where you can put two outlets in one and that kind of thing. So we find tons and tons of blown fuses on that circuit. If you're certain it's not a fuse, which you need to test the fuse with a test light, not just to replace it, to make sure there's current coming into the one end of the fuse, and then the fuse carries that power out to your consumer, which in this case is the outlet. But short of that, a wiring diagram is going to be the next thing to see where that fuse gets its power, because it could be from another fuse, a bigger one that powers other things, and that may be part of the branch, and or there's a relay involved that turns those power supplies on and off. So anyway, it's deeper. If you confirm that it's really not the fuse, check other fuses, and then it's going to be wiring diagram to see where the power went.
Uh-huh. Robert.
I'm going to tell my mechanic that. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. We'll take a break here. You know, it occurs to me, Gordon, that Zach the engineer has a hate-o-meter for me, and I think the hate-o-meter is off the charts at this very time. It's not my fault, Zach. 800-348-2551 if you have a car or truck question. We'll be back. Okay, Zach has reset the hate-o-meter, and we'll see how we do for the rest of the program. 800, it's a hate-o-meter, I'm sorry. It's the European version I'm thinking of. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Robin in Albany writes, my regular repair shop put four new Goodyear Assurance tires on my 2015 Subaru in November. There's been a lot of road noise since then. It differs according to the road surface. For example, it's noisier when I'm on newer pavement. It's likely the new tires. Oh, is it likely the new tires, something else, or both? So far, the shop has replaced one of the wheel bearings. It's still noisy, and that's Robin in Albany.
Yeah, so wheel bearings have become almost a chronic thing in repair shops. We are replacing them probably weekly on various cars.
Why?
The design of the bearing changed quite a bit from the conventional days where they were tapered roller bearings that were packed in grease that were put into a spindle and you tightened up a nut and there was a grease seal on them.
Yeah.
And they were serviceable, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Right.
Now they're,
you could repack them.
Yeah. Now they're unitized. So they're manufactured and assembled in a factory and they're sealed and pressed together and they're non-serviceable. They're there for life and when they fail, they're done.
Yeah.
They're unitized. They have a purpose, and they are more suitable with ABS brakes and all the new modern stuff. But they wear out, and cars last longer. So you're getting, you know, 150,000 miles, and it's wheel bearing time. And it's, I guess that's not really the craziest thing to need.
Yeah.
But Subarus, what year was her car, Ray? Is that still on your phone, or did you swipe that away?
I might have deleted. Oh, 20. I want to say. I'm going to guess here, 2015.
Yeah, I think you said. I think that's what you said. I need to take more better note of that. But yeah, so it could very well be another wheel bearing. Obviously, the car has four of them, one per wheel. And if this vehicle has enough miles on it, it sooner or later will probably need them all at one point or another. So it could be another wheel bearing and not the tires.
Now, if you are on a road, let's say, that has, it's very, it's been repaired very often, and it resembles the moon, like portions of Quail Street that I drive every day. Does that affect, I know it'll affect various things if you drive over it every day, but will it affect the bearings?
Yes, it beats them up. Just think of that tire slamming in those bumps, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times. The bearing is also taking that shock. So some people say, why is my right front wheel bearing always worn out? Your travels may put you through 40,000 bumps on the right side of the car and 4,000 on the left, you know?
All right, a couple of more emails here. We have so many, and then we'll get back to the phones. Okay. Have you had the chance, this is from Nick, have you had the chance to dissect or a Tesla or other e-car and explore?
Dissect?
Take apart.
Yeah, no.
Vivisect.
No. Yeah. There's very few in my wheelhouse. I just do some inspections on a few, and Tesla is has wrapped up their audience very tightly in bringing it to their service facilities and in their network. And I totally get it because it's a new concept, and they're probably the most popular, or they are the most popular electric vehicle.
Oh, God, they're nice.
And they do go to Tesla service centers, which I think there's one in the Albany area now, somebody told me about.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
This email from Betsy, love your bike. BMWs are great. Back to car issues. My smart entry system indicator light in my 2015 Honda Fit has been going on and off. I have an appointment to get it checked, as my research indicates that one day it will come on and the car won't start. It is currently off. My appointment to get it checked is Thursday. Will they be able to do anything diagnostically if the light is out at that time? And that's from Betsy, who is a motorcycle safety instructor and fellow BMW rider.
Well, excellent. Good question. Good call.
Yep.
Or email, I guess. Yeah, so if there is a problem with that security system that was enough to set a code in the security module, it should be in its history, unless it's been gone for a long time. So it should register a past problem in history. Key fobs or the chip in the key are critical. So I think it might be a good idea to still get it checked.
Okay, fair enough. And then we'll just do one more email for now. We'll try to get to them again toward the end of the show, if possible, but it's been pretty crazy. This one's from Alvin. I have a 1953 BMW R51/3 for 54 years. Runs beautifully. I keep it serviced every year. Lately, however, it becomes nearly impossible to restart when the engine is hot. I got to wait about 20 minutes for it to cool before it will restart. Any idea what's causing that?
Yeah, well, so that's a, you know,
that's being, another motorcycle question.
A bike of that age, of course, is ignition points, condenser, and a conventional ignition coil. So what bothers that system in hot weather or heat is usually, and not always, an ignition coil. And I don't know if that Beamer of that vintage used one or two coils, because a lot of those bikes fired each plug at the same time with one coil. So ignition coils come into the picture. A condenser can create trouble when it gets hot. And those are old school changeable items.
Yeah.
Unless it is having a fuel problem when it gets hot and sits and you get a vapor lock issue. And then the vehicle is, in effect, out of gas for a little while.
Interesting. Well, that would seem to be an easy one to fix. You vent, right?
Yeah. I mean, you want to make sure that your lines are not too close to anything hot, which on that bike, they should stay rooted the way they were designed to. But, yeah, I would look, check for anything that's near heat and see what's failing at that time. Pull a wire off, see if it's losing spark.
Mm. And can you still buy parts for a 54 bike?
Yeah. Yeah, BMW you can.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. Back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Sharon, who is in Pittsburgh, New Hampshire. Sharon, how are you?
Good. I hope all you guys well today. I have a 1988 F-350. I love this workhorse of a truck. It wasn't running quite right. It was misfiring. So I replaced two of the glow plugs. It's still not running quite right. Somebody told me I have to replace all of the glow plugs. Do you know if this is true or not? Because that's kind of expensive.
Yeah. So the glow plug is a starting aid only. The glow plug is there
right.
just to help you start when the engine is not up to temp. So once you're up and running and you're at temperature and the engine's smoothed out, the glow plugs are completely out of the picture. So if you're running poorly at that stage, now it's more than likely potentially injector related, fuel injector, not glow plug.
Glow plug is only for diesel?
Yes.
Okay.
And it is exactly what it states. It's a little probe that turns red hot before you crank the engine over to get it to start. Diesel only.
Gotcha. Sharon.
So it would be the inject, not the fuel injector.
Yes, if you're having a poor running condition, the glow plugs come out of the picture once you're running. So they're no longer relevant once the engine is running and you're headed down the highway. So if that's when you're having the problem, it could be injector related.
Oh, awesome. I will check that out. Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it.
Sharon, thanks for the call and thanks for listening. And now we go to Liberty, New York. And Ashlyn, you're on.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Good.
So I have a 2008 Hyundai Accent. It's a manual car. Now, in the past 2 years or so, it's been happening on and off. And they seem to have fixed some issues and then it came back again. So basically, what happens is that I put gas into my tank, and then in order for me to move the vehicle or to keep the car it running, I have to either press the clutch and put it into first gear and rev the engine, or basically just go. I can't let it sit. I can't let it do whatever. So my question is, do you know or have an idea of what might be causing that issue?
And this only happens after filling the tank. Is that what you said?
Yes, it never happens any other time. It's only when I fill the tank.
Okay. How long has the check engine light been on?
So the check engine light, again, it has been on and off. It just came on, but it wasn't for the reading that was stated. It was something like a sensor had to do nothing with like the gas related issues.
Right. The reason I ask that is there is a particular solenoid valve that sticks open or leaks that will, when you're filling the tank up, it pushes a ton of vapors from the tank into the intake of the engine, and it effectively floods the engine for a minute. So you go to the gas station, you fill it up, you start it, and all of a sudden it's either cranking a long time to get started, or when it starts, it's sputtering and acting terrible, like you're flooded, and then it clears up after a minute, and you're fine till the next fill-up. And that is usually something called the purge valve. And you may or may not get a code that says evap purge valve failure. You might get a small leak or a large leak. Mm-hmm. So I'd be very suspicious of the purge valve in that instance.
So we have actually replaced that. So is this going to be like a continual issue, or is it just that's just the way the car is made?
Well, the purge valve is pretty easy to test. If it's easy to get at, which usually they are, you can take that valve off and you can attempt to, if you don't have any tools like a vacuum pressure pump, you could just hook a whole little hose up to it and see if you can blow through it and if it'll resist passing any air, or you can suck on it like a straw drinking your milkshake and see if it holds that vacuum or if it slowly leaks by. If it's leaking by, the vapors are getting past it.
Okay.
So I'd be suspicious of it.
Yeah, that's my wondering. It's like we keep replacing with new ones. Is there like a specific brand you think you could recommend maybe?
We shouldn't probably do the specific brand.
Right. Well, I tend to stick with big name, high quality that's going to back you up with warranties and or the original. What kind of car is it? A Hyundai Accent?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it may not be that expensive to buy one from a Hyundai dealer.
All right. Thanks for answering my questions. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. And this is something you and I have talked about many times, that sometimes parts, you buy a new one and it's a bad part.
Absolutely. It happens, well, to me or to somebody that replaces a lot of one thing, we do encounter it, you know?
Yeah. I'm on my third mass airflow sensor on my Nissan. All right. Here we go with Christine in Summitville. Christine.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
You there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Okay. 2012 Frontier, Nissan Frontier. My ABS pump is going bad. I can feel it on my, you know, my foot on the brake pedal. Can I just disconnect that and be okay with just brakes?
Well, so when you say the pump is going bad, are you getting the feeling that the ABS is coming on when it is not supposed to?
You know, I tried to put you on regular. I tried to get you off the speaker. Then you just asked when when the pump is going bad. No, I do have brakes, but it's like it's really feeling it in the brake pedal, and it's making it like blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So, I don't like that
but
sound.
Then what happens? But then what happens was, and then I get on the dashboard that I don't have the ABS anymore, and then I got smooth braking.
Yes. So my question was, before you were switching me over. Do you get the feeling that you are having a false activation of the ABS, like you're on snow or ice, but you really aren't? Is that what you're feeling?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So it's you probably have an issue with one of the wheel speed sensors, and I would get it diagnosed first, because if it's not that costly to fix it, you're better off having that system operating. It can be disconnected, and it still will pass New York State inspection with the ABS light on, but the braking system will benefit from it working. So I'd try to fix it first. And if the shop says it's bad news, then you decide. But I don't think it's your pump. I think it's a wheel speed sensor issue.
Is that better than a pump or
worse? Oh, way better.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
All right, Christine, thanks a lot. Good luck. We appreciate the call very much. And now to New Windsor and Mike. Mike, you're on. Hey, Mike, you got to turn the radio down a little bit, buddy. Mike is not listening on the phone. Now Zach's hate-o-meter is going up and up and up and up and up. Mike, are you there? All right, you're done. I'm sorry, Mike. I apologize. Here's just and it's my fault. Mike, it's not your fault. When you're calling in and we finally get to you, you got to turn the radio down. There's this long delay, and it annoys me. Barbara and Saugerties. Barbara, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Can you hear me?
You betcha.
Okay. I have a 2016 Hyundai Tucson.
All right.
I love this car. It's the one with the racing motor in it and whatever. It's everybody else hates it, but I love it. But underneath, there's fiberboard on the bottom of the car or something that's supposed to be like the bottom to hold things, and it's coming off. It's breaking off. It's like it covers the underneath part of the car.
Right.
When I took it into Hyundai, they said, "Oh, well, you can't get another one. It's very expensive." I said, "Well, don't you have like a metal one or something to put underneath there so it doesn't get wet under the car?" "Well, no, not really. It costs about $1,000." So I'm not sure if the car is going to be all right or if it's getting wet. I mean, nothing's stopping.
Right.
So that's my question.
Is this under your engine? Is this way up front underneath the engine and transmission?
But,
or?
And it goes all the way to the back. Yeah, it's the front and the back, but it's like pieces come off. Like a friend of mine said, Dory, your car's falling out of your car, and that's when I found it.
Right. So a lot of cars have these underbody shields now, and first off, they started protecting the bottom of the engine and the transmission, and it's actually very beneficial. Salt water from the winter and all the junk and debris and grime from the road doesn't go up there and blast the bottom of the engine and cause corrosion and all kinds of issues. And for aerodynamics, a lot of cars have these running along the whole bottom. And unfortunately, they're low to the ground in some cases, or you run over something or a parking curb by accident.
A puddle.
Yeah. So maybe what you could do is take it to a independent repair shop and see if they can resecure what you've got there and fix them rather than $1,000 replacement of all those panels. Try that first.
There's lots of panels under there. I thought it was one thing.
No, it's not one. It's not one shield. It's a variety of them that go together underneath the vehicle. So you may not only need one of them. But get it checked at your repair shop, and then they can look up and see how much they cost, and you decide. You know, if you want them to jury rig it up in there or order a new one.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Barbara, thanks a lot. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. And this email here, we only have 1 minute to go. This is from Michael in Eagle Bridge. I have an 08 Ford Edge that has a rumbling noise and vibration on hard takeoff. And when I turn to the right on a long, fast turn, really even a slow turn, I can hear it's two-wheel drive and wondering if it's a wheel bearing. How can I tell? The transmission does not appear to slip at all, and that's from Mike in Eagle Bridge.
Yeah, so wheel bearings, like we spoke about earlier, are very common, and bad tires mimic wheel bearings and vice versa. So if you're unsure, it needs to go to a shop, and we have a stethoscope. And on a vehicle like that, I'd put somebody in the vehicle.
Yeah.
We would put it in gear, spin the wheels up, and listen with a scope.
Yeah.
And then we can pinpoint where the noise is coming from. And it could be a wheel bearing.
Uh-huh. There you go. I guess we have time for one more here, and we'll do this. This is quickly from Mark. Back in the old days, we used to flush everything. We'd flush tranny fluid. We'd flush coolant. We'd even flush the power steering, the brake fluid. Nowadays, it seems like the recommendation is not to flush anymore, but just to drain and fill. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because a lot of the transmissions now are not suitable for flushing. You don't hook those lines up and run the stuff through them, particularly the CVT transmissions.
Yeah.
And a lot of these liquids last much longer, so the manufacturers just say keep them in there longer. So it's more of an aftermarket thing, really.
Well, Gordon Fricke, we are done. Time to get the Beamer up and up on the road, and we'll see you next month.
Sounds great.
Support comes from Grapes on Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 20 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. GrapesOnGrainsWine.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the forests, wetlands, shorelines, and ridges that protect Lake George permanently. Projects, events, and news at lglc.org. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for calling and the emails and whatnot. Tomorrow on the program, we'll welcome back UAlbany physics professor Kevin Knuth. Kevin was part of a scientific team featured in a new movie, A Tear in the Sky. It's a journey into the UFO, UAP phenomenon with a team of military personnel and scientists, physicists, and whatnot. Tomorrow at 2, we'll talk Tic Tacs.